It's Monday, June 12th. Do you know what day it is? It's today in sports betting. Hello and welcome to the start of the week. Interesting Monday slate. Big NBA championship basketball game tonight. Can the Heat bring home can the Nuggets bring home their first ever championship? Or did the Heat send it back to South Beach? I'll let you know what I'm thinking soon. But before we get into that, this is Sports Ethos presentation. And if you haven't already, go to sportsethos.com. Check out a lot of our information there. A lot of free information, ton of podcasts. Whether you're into sports wagering, which is the group that I head up, or you're into fantasy sports, or you're into DFS, ton of information, a lot of contributors. If you're interested in joining the team, by all means, send me a DM, let me know. But a lot of interesting stuff going on here and a lot of great content being produced. I'm your host, Doug Reed, and as always, you can find me at Doug_Reed34 on the Twitter machine. Always happy for any DMs, feedback, thoughts, comments, things you like, dislike, send them to me and I will respond as quickly as I can, which is usually relatively quickly. Before we get to the NBA and the 8 games in the diamond, a little walk down the history of June 12th in sports. So about 33 years ago, Ricky Henderson on this date, June 12th, stole his 900th base, becoming just the second player ever to steal that many bases. He would obviously go on to surpass Lou Brock as the all-time steals leader. But 900, put that in perspective. You know, if a guy steals 40 bases this year, let's say 45, just make the math work easy. If he steals 45 bases this year, these days, he's an elite base stealer. And he'd have to do that for 20 years. Don't think that's going to happen. If somebody steals 90, nobody steals 90, even this year with increased bases, new rules to promote scoring. Somebody one day might get up to 90, but he'd have to do that for 10 years. And that's just to get to 900. I think Ricky got over 1,000. So I'm not sure we're ever going to see another base stealer quite like Ricky Henderson. But this day, 23 years ago, he hit number 900. A year later, 1991, the Bulls beat the Lakers 108-105 in game 5 of the NBA championship to win their first of 3 straight titles. And Michael Jordan was named the game series MVP. 2002, the Lakers beat the New Jersey Nets 113-107 for their third straight title, and Shaq won his third straight MVP. That's we're back in the Shaq and Kobe days. Good times for Lakers fans. 2009, in the Stanley Cup, Pittsburgh beat Detroit 2-1 in Game 7 at Detroit, and this was the third cup for Pittsburgh. What's interesting is 7 years later in 2016 on this exact date, also June 12th, Pittsburgh beat San Jose 3-1 to win the series 4-2 and win their fourth cup. Squeezed in between there, back to 2011, Dallas Mavericks won their only NBA championship on this date. They beat the Heat 105-95 in Game 6 to win their first title. 2017, the Golden State Warriors played the Cleveland Cavaliers and won in Game 5, 129-120. I think this is the third straight year that these teams played in the finals, which is quite interesting. You don't see that very often in any sport anymore. And then in 2019, Boston beat St. Louis 4-1 to win the Stanley Cup and finish what was a credible season for them. Not as credible this year, but they obviously aren't going to be winning the Stanley Cup this year, but it was a great season back in 2019. So a lot of interesting date. Huge, I think, you know, I love that Ricky Henderson stat, but a lot of championships have been won on this date. Early June, that's what tends to happen. The NBA wrapping up, the NHL wrapping up. So will it be another championship night tonight for Denver? That is the question. And I see this game right now. We have Denver about -9 and total 209.5. You can shop around. It seems to be still bouncing, oddly enough, between -9 and -8.5. So depending on what side you're on, definitely shop around for that number. So, you know, down on DraftKings, I see it down to 8.5, but -115. The total is 210 on FanDuel. Just resetting FanDuel on FanDuel. Also 8.5, -110 though, and the total is 210 although juiced a little to the under. So definitely shop around. Now, just to recap this series. So Denver's up 3-1. First two games were at Denver. Denver won first one 104-93, so they won by 11. They were about, I think, an 8.5-point favorite. So easily covered. Well, it wasn't actually easy, but covered that one. Now, I think they were 9-point favorites because I remember there's a shot late in the game in garbage time, and had Miami hit it, they would have come close to covering, so they would have lost by 9. So I think they're about 9-point favorites, and total was in around the 214 number. So Denver won by 11, covered, and 197 went under. Next game, Miami came in as 8.5-point underdogs again, but they won 111-108, so they won by 3, covered. 219 was the total. That actually went over, the only game in the series that total's gone over. Game one in Miami, Denver won 109-94. They were about 3-point favorites. They won by 15, easily covering. 203 was the total. And last game, Denver 108-95. They were about 8-point favorites. They won by 13, easily covering. 203, also the total, also going under. So Denver has won. Every game Denver's won, they've covered. They've been a favorite in every game. The three games they won, they've covered. They've won by 11, by 15, by 13. So they've won and covered easily. The totals have, other than every game Denver's won, totals went 197, 203, 203. All went well under by 4 to 6 points. The first one by even more. And the game Miami won and covered, the total actually went over. So not that I follow those kind of trends or think that there's anything to buy in that. Obviously, if Miami wins, they have to score more. If they score more, the total tends to go over. So if you think the Heat are going to win, you could probably lean to the total over. When I look at the spreads are fairly evenly split. The total at 9, as I said, it's come down to about 8.5. I see at 9, we've got 68% of the bets on Miami, but 64% of the money. So flip that around. 34% of the bets on Denver, 36% of the money. On the total, 209.5, about it's ticking up. No, it's still, 209.5, 210. We've got about 68% of the bets, 74% of the money on the over. So if anything, I would lean to the over. I know the games have all, the three Denver wins have gone under, but I'm actually going to be on Miami. It's sitting at 8.5. If I can get it at 9, I'm going to be on Miami. I think they can keep this game close. I said earlier, I think this series goes to 6. For that to come true, Miami would have to win. Do I think Miami's going to win tonight? No. But I could see them covering 8.5, 9-point spread. Backs to the wall. Jimmy Butler, Kyle Lowry's been there before, veteran, getting more minutes. Kevin Love's been there, getting more minutes. Bam's playing well. Butler is not his elite self, but he's been good enough. And the supporting cast, the depth has certainly been there throughout the playoffs. So I think they have what it takes to keep it close. I'm not sure they win. And I don't think they're going to win, but I don't think they're going to lose by 9 or more points. Although in the 3 losses, as I said earlier, they've lost by 11, by 15, by 13. So they've certainly lost big. But I think they keep it close. I'm going to be on Miami. And if anything, I would lean towards the over. As I said earlier, if Miami, it's a one-game sample size, but the one game that went over in a series, the total is at 219 and went over. Total here, 210. If Miami wins, they're going to have to score. Obviously, they're going to have to wait to find a way to stop. Or you can't stop Jokic and Murray. They got to slow them down. But I think if they win, they're going to have to put up some more points then. They're going to have to get well over 100. The 3 losses, they've averaged 94 points, 93, 94, 95. So you got to learn to put, not learn, figure a way to put the ball in the basket, get some points, control the big guys in Denver, and I think they keep it close again. Do I think they win? No, but I think they keep it closer than 9 points. So I'm going to be on Miami catching those points. Can take a quick break when we get back. A short game, Monday game. Monday in the MLB is often a short slate, 8 games, and we'll get to those in a second.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only, not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
First game of the diamond is in Detroit, where the Tigers are hosting the Braves. Now, most of the numbers, there is a money line, there's no run line, no spread, and that's because Detroit just named Tyler Holton their opener. He's clearly going to be an opener for this game. And the Braves have Charlie Morton ready on the hill. So I'm seeing Atlanta anywhere between a minus 220, minus 225 favorite. Tigers in the buyback, plus 185 to about plus 190. Can't touch this game. I like Atlanta. I like them a lot. Not laying 225. Morton comes in 69 in the third innings, 3.89 ERA, 1.46 whip. Not doing his usual things, but I just think the way Detroit's hitting, they're struggling against everybody. And I see Morton being able to limit them. Bullpen game for the Tigers. as much as Holton has done well, I don't really see the Tigers bullpen being able to limit the Braves for the entire game. The Braves have been hitting slow down a little, obviously. They get swept by Oakland recently, so slowed down quite a bit. But they're the Braves, so they will shake out of it. So not really a whole lot of analysis to be had in this game because I don't have a side either way. Next game is in Boston. And I'm not there yet, but I might be on one play here. Red Sox host the Rockies. Boston comes in minus 230 on the money line. The road Rockies plus 195. Total here is 10. Juice to the under at minus 120 on FanDuel. It's already moved. Sorry, on DraftKings. On FanDuel, it's already moved down to 9.5. So you can get 10 on DraftKings at minus 120, which I don't want to touch. And on FanDuel, it's down to minus 9.5, but it's juicy over minus 115. So you can get the under minus 105. That's probably the play. I'm not on it yet, but that's what I'm looking at. Don't want to play the minus 120. It's going to wait a little closer to game time, see if I can get minus 10, but at a minus 115 or better. For the Red Sox, they throw out their veteran lefty who is back and pitching fairly well. I think three good outings and one bad outing, James Paxton so far. 26 innings, 3.81 ERA, 1.23 whip, 36 strikeouts, so he's mowing a lot of guys down, doing well there. For Colorado, Connor Siebold on the hill, 47 and two-thirds, 5.1 ERA, 1.41 whip. Not good numbers for Mr. Siebold, and we know Colorado is always weak in the road. So maybe a Boston team total. The problem is the team total is going to be up close to probably 5, and while I think they can get to Siebold for that, that is a lot. I'm just trying to pull up his numbers. That is a fair number of runs for anybody to score in this environment, especially probably a cold Boston, a little cold in the Northeast these days. So when I look at Siebold in his last few games against the Giants, 6 innings at San Francisco, 6 innings, 2 hits, 2 earned runs, which is pretty good because the Giants have turned into all of a sudden nearly a top 10 offense in the triple slash line. That was at home, even better. Before that, against Arizona, it's been a good offense in the last month or so. 5 1/3 innings, 3 hits, 1 earned run. So he's done well, though. Done well there. The few games before that, at home, 4 2/3 against the Mets, 3 earned runs. 3 2/3 at Texas, 5 hits, 5 earned runs. 4 1/3 at home against Cincinnati, 8 hits, 4 earned runs. So his numbers are not good, but they've not been terrible considering he pitches in Colorado. So I think the Sox can get to him. I think they can get to him for a few runs. And I think Paxton on the other side can hold down Colorado. So I lean to the under. If I can get it at 10, anywhere better than minus 20, that's what I'm going to be on. So I would suggest if you're on that play, shop around. The next game, just pulling my screen up again here. In St. Louis, where the Cards host the Giants, you can get the home Cards as the underdog at plus 105. The road Giants is the favorite, minus 125. Total here is 8, juice to the over at minus 115. And when I look at the total, I was looking at this total alert, and I see money coming in the under. 35% of the bets, 72% of the money coming in on the under 8. But when I look at DraftKings, it's juiced to minus 115 on the over. So there might be some value in taking that under. When I look at FanDuel, also minus 115 on the over. So money seems to be coming in the under. It opened at 8. It stayed at 8. But you're getting a bit better price on the under. So I'm going to look at that. And the reason is the pitching matchup. For San Francisco, they have Logan Webb, the righty on the hill, 84 and a third innings, 3.09 ERA, 1.09 whip. And for St. Louis, they have young lefty Matthew Liberatore, 15 innings, 6.00 ERA and 1.6 whip. He has struggled and had a couple good outings. I think people thought he could be the antidote that they needed, to say the least. Their starting pitching has been brutal this year. And I think he kind of bumped Steven Matz to the bullpen, but he just hasn't done it. When I look at his game logs, back his first game of the year, he came up against Milwaukee, 5 innings, 3 hits, no runs. They won 3-0. Great. Then he went in relief, had a bad outing, no big deal. Goes against Cleveland, they lose 4-3, 5 innings, 5 hits, 4 earned runs. Against Texas, they lose 6-4, 4 innings, 7 hits, 5 runs, 4 earned. Texas is a good offense, Cleveland not a good offense, so pretty small sample size for the lefty. Now, San Francisco doesn't exactly crush lefties. When I look at the Giants, their batting average, they're 14th, 258, on-base percentage 309, which is not very good. It puts them 22nd, and slugging is 394 against lefties, also not very good. That puts them in 21st. So below average triple slash line against lefties. I just not really sure I can get behind Liberatore here. Logan Webb, I can get behind. St. Louis has been struggling. I like their offense. I like their you know what? I don't like their team. I like their offense. I think they have the ability to wake up and be a definitely above average offense, but their pitching is brutal. And everybody says San Francisco is a great deal. Why do I keep killing them with San Francisco? Because they're playing the Giants. St. Louis is a great price. They're still sitting in last in the NL Central. They've got the best team. It's a good future to jump on. I don't think so. I don't think Pittsburgh's going to continue. I can't see the Cubbies winning it. I think it's still Milwaukee's division to lose, and everybody loves to dump on Milwaukee. And I get it. I mean, they've got question marks of their own. Their batters have struggled. They're brutal against lefties. They're sitting tied for Pittsburgh at top of the division, 34-32. The Pirates at 34-30. Since he's four games back, since he ain't winning it, since he's a great trend, Ellie De La Cruz is up. Edwin Encarnacio Strand, is on his way. They've got some great young pitching. They've got some good young players. I get it, but I don't think they're going to compete. The Cubbies 6.5 games back, no chance. And I wasn't high in the Cubbies start. In St. Louis, 27-39, 8 games back, 3-7 in their last 10. So this division could be won by anybody. I'm not buying St. Louis is going to do it because their starting pitching is terrible. And everybody, St. Louis will make a trade. You know, they've got smart management. Sure, they've got smart management. Sure, they're one of the best organizations, frankly, in the history of baseball. And they've been solid for the last decade, if not more. But their starting rotation is terrible. They don't need one pitcher. They need like three. When Miles Michaelis is your ace and your savior, you know, Adam Wainwright ain't going to do it. Liberatore, I don't think he's going to do it. They got Matz in the bullpen. They don't have an answer there. They don't even have, to me, a 500 pitcher. You know, they need kind of Miles Michaelis and Prey. And that ain't going to cut it, even if their offense wakes up. I don't think their offense alone can win that division. So a little sidebar here, a little rant. Apologize for that, but everybody's all over the Cards. I got nothing against the Cards. I really don't care who wins this division. I've got no stake in the game. I just don't think they're pitching. I think their starting pitching is the worst they've had probably in 10 or 15 years. And it's too bad. Everybody wants Wainwright to come back. And we love the guy. Nope, he does. But he's early 40s, coming back from injury. I don't think he has it in him anymore. And like I said, the rest of the guys in the rotation just aren't there for me. And it's going to take two or three starting pitchers. And with wild card teams in baseball, expanded playoffs, half of baseball needs starting pitching right now for a playoff run. So it's not going to be easy. I don't know if the Cards have a bunch of they don't have a bunch of prospects. They've got their prospects are up with them. Nolan Gorman, he's a guy that maybe could have traded. All of a sudden, he's bounced back. fairly mainstay in their rotation. Are they going to trade O'Neill when he gets back and healthy? Yeah, but are you going to get a top one or two starting pitcher for him and a decent prospect? I don't think so. So I don't really think they've got much that they can do. Anyways, sorry about my rant there on St. Louis. The long and short of that is don't take a future on St. Louis to win the NL Central. At least I won't be. Next game of the night. Not really on that game. Don't have a side there. If anything, I like San Francisco. -125 is a little steep. But they have been hitting well. Don't hit lefties, great. But if anything, I would take the Giants -125. In Texas, we have the Rangers hosting the LA Angels. The Rangers come in at -155 in the money line. Those favorites, the Angels +135. Total here is 10. Juice to the under at -115. No real trends on what side of the money people are on. So I like the Texas run line. And I've taken a few Texas run lines lately. I'm in the black on it. So it's been profitable, but there's always some risk in taking the run line. And the run line is +120. And the reason is LA's starting pitcher, Tyler Anderson, is a lefty, and Texas hits lefties quite well. We'll get to that in a second. So Anderson comes in 57 and two-thirds innings, 5.62 ERA, 1.6 whip, just 38 strikeouts, not enough strikeouts, 28 walks. That's what, a walk every second inning? Way too many. Dane Dunning, who has quietly had a low-key, very good season, and he's going to have to continue to do this with DeGrom out for the year. 53 and two-thirds innings, 2.52 ERA, 1.1 whip. Only 33 strikeouts, not striking enough guys, and 13 walks, which is pretty decent. But the angle here is Texas against lefties. And Anderson is a very average lefty to me. So, triple slash line. Texas has the fifth best batting average against lefties at .289. The best on-base percentage at .363. And the fourth best slugging percentage at .462. They're hitting lefties. They're hitting lefties hard. I like the way they've been playing pretty much all year. And I think they win this. I prefer not to take the run line, but the money line's a little pricey for me. So when I'm going, pulling up to see what they've done, their WRC plus against lefties, I know it's quite strong as well. Yeah, the WRC plus, Texas's so wins created plus is 130. So the league average is 100. Basically, if you're above it, you're, in this case, 30% better than the league average against lefties. So I like them to be able to get to Anderson. He has struggled at walking too many guys and against that Texas lineup with their power. When I look at their ISO against lefties, which basically just isolates power, Texas has a 1.173 ISO, which is the eighth best in baseball. So they're hitting for power. They've been hitting for power against everybody. I like the Rangers laying the run line, -1.5. Don't want to take them at -155. Next game in Kansas City, where we've got the exciting surging Reds in Kansas City to play the Royals. The Royals are home favorites, -115. You can get the Reds on the road at -105. Total here is 8.5, juice -110 on both sides. And we get Zach Greinke, the veteran, at home going for Kansas City, and Luke Weaver, the young righty, for Cincinnati. Weaver comes in 47 and third inning, 6.27 ERA, 1.42 whip, struggled this year. Not missing a lot of bats, but definitely has struggled. Zach Greinke, also not missing a lot of bats, but I'm going to be on his K-prop in a second. 66 and two-thirds innings, 4.59 ERA, 1.13 whip. He's had a bounce back year. And the knock, if you listen to my show the last year and a half or so, the play has been to play Greinke, play against him on the road and at home. Not necessarily play him, but he's going to be better at home. And he's actually righted that ship. He's pitched well. His last three games, he's pitched well on the road, and he's pitched fairly well at home. He's got a 1.13 ERA and a 1.13 whip, 4.59 ERA. Good whip and not great ERA, but decent for what he's been doing recently. 50 strikeouts and 66 and two-thirds innings. So not striking out a ton of guys. But I'm actually going to be on his K-prop, over 3.5. I got on a FanDuel at -118. When I look at what Cincinnati – so Cincinnati strikes out 8.93 times per nine innings on average, so just under once per inning. So I think Greinke – they're not letting Greinke go deep into games, but I could see him getting into five, maybe if he's pitching efficiently, five or six innings, at least five. So if he can get – one per inning, well, there's five. He kind of clears that easily. But when I'm looking at his game logs, Now, I was on an over, I think it was on Greinke, over 3.5 against Miami, and he got to 3. Then his defense let him down. He ended up giving up 5 runs in 4 1/3 innings. Prior to that, at St. Louis, 5 innings, 6 strikeouts. At home versus Detroit, 5 innings, 5 strikeouts. At the White Sox, 5 2/3, 4 strikeouts. At Milwaukee, 5 innings, 5 strikeouts. So 4 of his last 5 games, he got over that. And they're not necessarily letting him go deeper. They're letting him go around 80, 85 pitches per game. But if every, you know, in that stretch, he's gone into the 5th inning. He didn't do it last game, 4 1/3, but all 6 starts in May, he got at least 5 innings. Didn't get to 6, but he got at least 5 innings. So if he can get to 5 innings, through 5 innings, and the Reds are striking out once an inning, I know the math is never perfect, but that would equal 5 strikeouts. So that would hit me this prop. And young, free-swinging Reds, they're going to be hyped. They're going to be going for it. Big Park in Kansas City may limit some runs, may give them a few more batters to strike out. I'm on Mr. G to get those 3.5 strikeouts. On to where are we here? On to Seattle, where the M's are facing the Miami Marlins. Sorry, why is my system so wonky today? You get the home Mariners at -120. You get the road Marlins at +100. Total here is 7.5. Not juiced either way, -110. And for the Mariners, you get Bryce Miller, the right, young righty on the hill, and you get Jesus Lazardi, the lefty on the bump for the M's. Now, I was really, really hoping to take the Mariners because Seattle struggles against lefties. They do not hit lefties well at all. But Bryce Miller has also struggled for Seattle, and Bryce Miller has struggled for Seattle. He goes in 38 and 30 innings, 4.46 ERA, 0.97 whip. Those numbers sound good, but when I dig a little deeper into Mr. Miller, he had his first couple starts were quite impressive, and then he struggled in his last two. And I think a lot of people were saying, well, that it was to be expected because his first couple starts, yeah, he started, how many games did he start here? 6 starts. His first start is against Houston. Very good outing. 6 innings, 2 hits, no earned runs. Then he goes at Detroit. 7 innings, 3 hits, no earned runs. Not really much of a challenge. At Atlanta, 6 1/3, 4 hits, 3 earned runs. Okay, you know, got hit by a good team. Against Oakland, 6 innings, 2 hits, no earned runs. Okay, well, that's pretty good. You know, 3 of his first 4 outings gave up 0 or no runs. But they were against Oakland, Detroit. And against Houston, obviously, got hit a little. Then he goes into New York. At home against the Yankees, 4 2/3, 11 hits, 8 earned runs. Okay. Against Texas, at Texas, 2 1/3, 8 hits, 7 earned runs. All right, so who's Bryce Miller? Is he the Bryce Miller who shut down Oakland twice and Houston and Detroit once and Houston? Or is he the Bryce Miller who got knocked around by the Yankees in Texas? Hard to say. The problem is he's facing Miami. So I don't really have a whole lot of confidence that Miami's going to come in and light up Mr. Miller or anybody else. The way they've been struggling this year. When I pull up their numbers against righties, they are 248 batting average, 312 on-base percentage, and a 387 slugging. So not good numbers at all against righties. Not the worst in the league, for sure. More mid-pack. You know, that batting average at 248 is 13th. The on-base percentage at 312. Against righties, puts them tied with Seattle, actually, at 21st. So, and the slugging percentage is 387. They don't tend to have a whole lot of power. And, unfortunately, that is even squashed more by the home park. But they're 18th, so below average. They don't hit righties really well. They don't hit anybody really well. So, I can't really back them here. And not – so, games a stay away from me. As much as I would like to – go against Bryce Miller. Miami's offense just isn't there for me. Total 7.5. That's too low because if I'm right on Bryce Miller's struggles, Miami can put up 3 or 4 runs on their own. And Seattle, while they've, did I show Seattle's numbers against lefties? Seattle doesn't hit lefties all that well, but you know, they put up a couple runs. Now suddenly we're at 6 or 7 and I think it's a game. I like Miami, but at +102, not enough to take them on the money line. And I don't like Seattle because I think Lizardo's a better pitcher. What if he shuts him down? And then Seattle, their offense can't put any runs on the board. And Miami does get to Miller. So too many questions. Sometimes the best bet is just to stay away. So we move on. The next game in Arizona, where the D-backs host the Phillies, you can get the home D-backs at minus 106 and the road Phillies at the favorite, minus 110. Total here is 10, just to the over at around minus 120. And I'm actually on Philadelphia on the money line here, minus 110. So when we pull up the pitching pitching matchup, Matt Strom is the lefty, battle lefties here. Matt Strom is on the hill for Philly. He's 42 and a third, and he's bounced back and forth between the bullpen and the starting rotation, and he's done quite well. 3.61 ERA, 1.04 whip. He's not an opener, but I don't see him going more than about three or four innings because he's not outstretched out. But I would give him three or four innings. Tommy Henry on the flip side, also a lefty, 45 and a third innings, 4.37 ERA, 1.3 whip. And I think this game comes down to Matt Strom's been pitching well, and I'm not really sure Tommy Henry is exactly there. When we pull up his numbers, he comes in with a 4.37 ERA, but a 5.76 whip. So that means he has been very fortunate. He should have a whip, you know, 1.4 higher. So hasn't pitched all that well. Got rocked against Washington, out Washington last time out, four and a third, five hits, five earned runs. Prior to that, pitched well against Colorado. Games before that, Philly and Oakland hit him a little bit. So he's playing against Philly. And let me pull that lineup. 5 2/3. So back in May 22nd, a few weeks ago, 5 2/3, 4 hits, 2 earned runs, 2 walks, 5 strikeouts, and 2 long balls. So he's been struggling. Matt Strom, on the other hand, has been doing a good job. When I pull up his game logs, his FIP is actually better than his ERA. So his ERA 3.61, his FIP's 3.44. So he's actually underperformed what he should be. Anyways, I think when I pull up how these guys have done, these teams have done against lefties, I know Arizona is wrong category. Arizona has done fairly well against lefties, not exactly crushing the ball, but doing decent. Sorry to pull this up on the fly here. Arizona, yeah, there we go. 266 batting average, 322 on base percentage, 429 slugging. Philly against lefties, 244 batting average, 294 on base, not great, and a 420 slugging. So slightly worse on the Phillies. That's that on base percentage. Slightly worse numbers for the Phillies against lefties, but Matt Strom's a way better lefty than Tommy Henry, in my opinion. So I'm willing to back them on the road as the underdogs, taking the Phillies at minus 110. And next game. Nope, that's it. That's what I thought. We're out west for the last game. No, then we move on to no, we still got Tampa and Oakland. What the heck is going on with my system here? Last game of the night, the official last game in Oakland. We've got the A's hosting the Rays. You can get the Rays minus 260 in the money line. Maybe this is why I forgot about this game. And you can get Oakland plus 220. Total here is 8.5, juice to the over at minus 115. For the A's, we have Zach Eflin, 66 and 2/3, 2.97 ERA, 0.96 whip, 66 strikeouts, basically a strikeout per inning. James Caprillion, on the other hand, the righty for Oakland, 43 and 2/3, 7.21 ERA, 1.76 whip, 39 strikeouts, 43 and 2/3. So getting just under strikeout inning, not bad numbers. I like the Rays. I like the Rays to score. I don't like Oakland. I don't like Oakland to score. I like Eflin over Caprillion. So where do you go with this? I'm not laying 260, and the run line for the Rays, they're on the road, which is nice, but it's minus 165. I'm not laying that much in a run line now or probably ever. So stay away a game for me. No action on that one. I think Oakland will win. Or pardon me, I think the Rays will win. Yeah, Oakland's done well lately. Yeah, they're at home, but they're still Oakland. So, but you can't touch that with those numbers. So on the Texas run line, plus 120, Greinke over 3.5 Ks, and Philly on the minus 110 run line. Looking for that Colorado-Boston game. If I can get it at 9.5, at anything better than 120, well, 115 or better, I'll be on that. But as of right now, I'm not. And going to be watching that NBA Finals where my Heat, nah, They're not my heat, not even close to my heat. I just think they're going to keep the game close. And don't think they're sending it back to Miami, but I think they're going to keep it close. And I don't think they're going to be losing by nine. So I'm going to sit and wait, see if I can get this game back up to nine. If I can, I'm going to jump on the Heat at plus nine. And if anything with that, I would lean to the over. Still hovering around 210. Wait till you can get a minus. Pardon me, if you can get a 209.5, even better. But right now, right around 210. So hopefully you enjoyed the show. Hopefully you got some picks, some angles. Hopefully you can make money. Hopefully we can all make money. And hopefully we can have a good day in sports betting.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
American Giant makes great clothing, sweatshirts, jeans, and more right here in the U.S. Visit American-Giant.com and get 20% off your first order with code STAPLE20. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com, code STAPLE20.